Today on Off to the Races, Trevor McCarthy comes home. Lindsey Schultz is a name to remember. Our turf cup is full. All coming up right now on Off to the Races.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for joining us this Saturday. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding here in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. Today's show powered, as always, by The Racing Biz. You can learn more at theracingbiz.com. You got the free mobile app for your Android and Apple devices, and social media, of course, Facebook, Twitter, which is X now. Call it X. Elon says you have to, so it's X, not Twitter. Don't know why, but it is. Instagram, got that too. Look for at The Racing Biz on the socials. And of course, you keep up with Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding all year long, every day on theracingbiz.com. We got a great show teed up today. Want to stick around for this one? We got a little bit of a something old, something new vibe going on here. A little bit later, towards 10:15 or so, we're going to visit, and not old, old's not the right word, but a very familiar face to those of us here in the Mid-Atlantic, jockey Trevor McCarthy, who plied his trade for a number of years in Maryland, now racing in New York primarily, although back in the Mid-Atlantic this weekend and also last weekend. We'll talk about that. He's going to join us from 10:15 thereabouts, maybe a little after. Later on, new trainer Lindsey Schultz going to be in. This is just her second year, full year training on her own. She's going to stop by. She's sending out Highest Distinction as one of the major players in this afternoon's Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup at Pimlico. So she's got some interesting story. She's from Connecticut, which is not a typical place for a trainer to come from. So we'll talk to her a little bit about that. John Piazzik's going to close the show, help us do some handicapping for this afternoon's Pimlico Stakes. There's six of them on tap. Easy for me to say, six of them on tap, topped by the Turf Cup. This weekend, yes, racing at Delaware Park. Delaware's got the Cape Henlopen Stakes that McCarthy, who we'll be talking with shortly, gonna ride. Intriguing contender Tawny Port in there. Post time Delaware 12:30. Pimlico's card kicks off 12:25. And Charlestown races. Charlestown goes this evening, post time 7 p.m. Last week was closing day at Colonial Downs, and that card topped by the Virginia Oaks and the Grade 3 Virginia Derby. The former went to 30,000 Kelvin with one of today's guests, Trevor McCarthy, in the irons.
Stefani is just in behind. Alphabella hits the front. Idea Generation Mission of Joy still battling on 30,000 Kelvin. Down the far outside is Beautiful Navigator putting in a bid. 16th pole, 30,000 Kelvin, resilient toward the inside. Alphabella, Root Cause from out of the pack. Here's Root Cause charging after 30,000 Kelvin. They hit the wire. Photo finish. I think 30,000 Kelvin came back to win it.
30,000 Kelvin, trained by John Terranova for SJB Stable. She's got four wins, two in stakes company from 11 career starts. The Oaks victory followed a win in Delaware's Christiana Stakes July 15th. In the Virginia Derby, we might have seen a star being born. Integration, in just his second career start, blew past Grade 1 winner Program Trading for the win.
As Runaway Storm leads them, here's Program Trading kicking into gear down the outside. Mondego going to try to go with that one. Integration is also warming up nicely on the far outside. Final 16th to go. Program Trading. Here's Integration storming down the crown of the track. Program Trading, Integration. Integration getting the better of Program Trading. What a training and job by Shug McGay. Integration won at a length and a half the Virginia Derby.
Integration now 2-for-2 in his brief career is trained by Shug McGahee for a partnership including West Point Thoroughbreds, among others. Kendrick Carmouche was in the irons. I gotta say, he was pretty happy about it too.
Man, once my horse felt a little touch from his horse, he just wanted to just run all out, and man, I just had to guide him there. You know, Shug McGahee and West Point and Woodford Stables. I'm just proud that they shipped me here today to be successful at Colonial Downs. in my first Virginia Derby. How you gonna beat it, baby? Louisiana in the house.
How you gonna beat it, baby? Louisiana in the house. That was Kendrick Carmouche. The race calls were Jason Beam, Colonial Downs track announcer. We had Jason on this program last week. So Integration, 30 Thou Kelvin win the big ones at Colonial Downs on closing day. Season has come to an end for another, oh, you know, 9-10 months, whatever, wherever they're going to end up starting next year's race meet in New Kent, Virginia. All right, shout out and thanks to our program supporters. Those include the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com online horse auction site, True Valor standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. Thanks so much, guys, for the support. We do appreciate it. As mentioned, still to come, jockey Trevor McCarthy going to join us, trainer Lindsey Schultz, handicapper John Piazek. So several big interviews still in front of us. But as I mentioned, Colonial Downs wrapped up its meet last week. That was it. So I want to kick things off with Virginia Equine Alliance's Debbie Easter, the VEA, kind of the driving, one of the driving forces behind the rebirth of Colonial Downs and racing in Virginia. And they represent the horsemen and the breeders and the harness folks. Harness racing, by the way, happening at Shenandoah Downs now. And so who better to talk with than Debbie Easter to get her sense of how the meet went, what the changes were, and what we might look for the future. Here is my conversation with Debbie Easter. Debbie, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Appreciate you making a little bit of time. Have you guys come up for air now that the Colonial meet has ended?
Oh, we're getting there. For me, who drives down there every day, it's 4 hours of driving 3 times a week, and that sounds like I'm whining compared to some of these trainers that drive all over the place, but I'm ready for a little break.
Completely understand you there. What is your assessment of the meet overall? Give us kind of the big picture.
I think if you look at the overall high view of what happened at Colonial Downs this year, I'd say it was a pretty good success. I mean, are there things that we need to work on to make it better for the customer, the horseman, everything about it? There's things that we can work on, but you know, Churchill just took over. It's their first meet. I think the guys that are in charge of Colonial for Churchill at the racetrack and really, really do want to make it a better day. And we saw that with the Festival of Racing, the Arlington Million Day and the Derby Day. Those two big days down there, they really made an effort to take our suggestions of how we were underserving our customers in the past by not being able to get them food or beverages or wagering. They really took some of our suggestions and tried to incorporate it into their new days. And I do think we served our customers better on those bigger days.
Well, that's certainly good. I was fortunate to be there for both of them they certainly seemed like good days, seemed like nice crowds and people having a good time and huge betting on the Arlington Million. I mean, that shattered every prior Colonial Downs record.
Sure. It was, I think, close to twice as much as almost twice as much as we've ever had wagered at Colonial, and as it should be. I mean, we're looking at 2 grade 1s and a grade 2. We should be able to $10 million, I think, or just shy of $10 million. We ought to be able to generate the kind of handle that other tracks do that have those types of races. And I think it was a great start.
And you just referenced the grade two in specific. I want to talk about for a minute. That was the grade two Secretariat, and kind of cool to have the Secretariat Stakes run in the state of Secretariat's birth, run over the track named for Secretariat. And then while you're at it, why don't you have it be won by a Virginia bred in Higante? What kind of a cool moment was that for you and for the Virginia thoroughbred community?
It's so great. And it's so great to see a breeder like Mr. and Ms. Backer that have been doing it for so long be able to breed that kind of horse. But the even better part of it is we had the the governor and first lady, and we're very lucky here in Virginia. The first lady and the governor are very supportive of horse racing and horses in general, but I couldn't have hired a marketing company to speak about Virginia racing more than the governor did on TV that day. They had the best time. They came down there. The governor was telling everybody how great Virginia racing was, and we need to come to Virginia. And the best thing is a couple of weeks later, the governor was supposed to come, but he got tied up something else. But the first lady made a special trip down to the backside to get to see Gigante and get her picture taken with the horse. And how often does that happen with any politician, much less the governor and the first lady?
Yeah, no, maybe Maryland could borrow them for a minute or two.
Exactly. Everybody needs them. And maybe we'll get them one day that way.
Yeah. Let's hope. We're talking with Debbie Easter of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, Virginia Equine Alliance. And Debbie, one big change, obviously, was the shift from Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday racing to Thursday, Friday, Saturday racing. I know that was an area of concern for a lot of people. What are the early returns now that you've had a season of weekend racing?
So it's interesting, and I think it's a little too early, and we got to look at a lot of the numbers. But you look at overall handle, and we were actually under handle even with the big day of $10 million on Arlington Million. We were under handle from last year, which tells you that, hey, we had built ourselves a pretty nice little niche on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. The number of horses in a race was down just a little bit, but not as much as actually we expected. We expected it to be about a horse a race because of having to run against you all up in Maryland, which we didn't want to do. I think we picked up horses quite a bit more horses from Maryland, but I do think that it made it much more difficult. It felt like, and these are numbers we have to check, it felt like we didn't have as many of folks from up your way that supported us over the years run as many horses. Now, I know I said that and we went and checked a couple trainers, and my feeling was totally untrue. But looking at it, it felt that way. I think that still, if we're going to make this successful in the Mid-Atlantic, we've got to figure out some way that Maryland and Virginia work together. It's just silly that we're running against each other now. It's always been silly. It's always why we wanted to have the circuit. And I'm hoping that the track managers can figure out a way to make this work a little better, because I think it'll be positive for both states if we can.
I think that's clearly true, especially in a time of declining foal crops. There just aren't enough horses to go around. So the more innovatively we can share things, the better it is for everybody. One thing I did want to ask you about, because it seems like it was a pretty admirable safety record at the Colonial Meet. Talk about that.
No, I think that especially in these times, any time that you can say, to my knowledge, we didn't have a catastrophic breakdown. We all know what a good turf course that Colonial has, our little secret is how good the dirt course is there also. But I think we were very fortunate. I think that everybody, this all started with Jill Byrne when we reopened the track, but I think everybody's very committed. From the racing commission to the people that run the backside to the trainers, very committed in trying to run racing as safely as we possibly can in Virginia. I mean, let's face it, we're a little bit lucky. We get to run, 90% of our races on what the stats say are the surface, or is the safest surface that you can run on, the turf. So we probably benefit quite a bit from that. But secondly is that, as everybody knows, we have just a very quality turf course.
And that makes a huge difference for sure. All right, Debbie Easter, good stuff there. A successful meet at Colonial Downs. Some work still to be done, but I think an acknowledgement that that it's there and folks are ready to dig in and do it. Thanks so much for joining me here on Off to the Races.
Thank you so much, and good luck up there with your meet this fall.
All right, interesting stuff there from Debbie Easter of the Virginia Thoroughbred Association, Virginia Equine Alliance. Some really good things going on in Virginia. Colonial Downs meet just concluded last week. Still to come on our program here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Up past the halfway point of the show, going to have a visit with trainer Lindsay Schultz. Lindsay Schultz making some waves, making noise in the Mid-Atlantic in this string of about 4 or 5 weeks. She had her first stakes win of any sort in a state bred stake at Colonial Downs, then had her first open stakes win at Monmouth Park, and then her first graded stakes win also at Monmouth Park. She's got two in at Pimlico today, including highest distinction in the Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup, the feature of the card. Following her, John Piazza going to join us, going to close out the show, a little bit of handicapping for today's Pimlico card, as well as some news from Maryland Million and the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, good friends of this program. And of course, you can read all about what's going on with all these things on theracingbiz.com. But first, right now, wanted to talk with jockey Trevor McCarthy, a very familiar name and face to those of us in the Mid-Atlantic. He rode a couple of stakes winners last week at Colonial Downs, including the winner of the Virginia Oaks, 30,000 Kelvin. And he's got a live mount this afternoon. A really interesting horse, actually. Named Tawny Port in the Cape Henlopen Stakes, the feature at Delaware Park, $200,000 turf test. Here's my conversation with Trevor McCarthy. Trevor, thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. We appreciate making a little bit of time. Well, hadn't seen you in a while, but we got to see you at Colonial Downs. That was a productive visit back to a track you know pretty well.
Thanks for having me, Frank, and absolutely, it was great to get back down to New Kent, Virginia, and kind of some of my old stomping grounds of the Mid-Atlantic, and to have great success that night for great connections. It was really a special night.
Yeah, you were the leading rider at Colonial in 2019, the year they came back, and then you were winning basically every race you had a mount in 2020 before COVID. But you told me that you hadn't won either the Oaks or the Derby, so you get your first Virginia Oaks win on 30,000 Kelvin. How'd that feel?
Yeah, that was really cool. Just a filly that I thought would be forward, and surprisingly, she wound up to be on the lead. The horse inside of us, the five horse, was really the speed of the race, and she seemed to act up pretty well in the gate and didn't get off great. And my filly seemed to, you know, be in a really, you know, she had been training really, really good, as John had told me, and she warmed up really well, and she left there with a great break. And, you know, when they break so good like that, it's always a great sign. And she got in a super great rhythm throughout the race, and for her to be game to hang on to win by a head was pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a game effort. I was surprised she was 11-1. I thought that was pretty generous. I thought she was live in that race, and obviously she was. Were you? Did you handicap it? How'd you handicap it? I guess did you see her as a major player?
I saw her as a horse that definitely had the chance to win, and if not win, but to run well. Watching her Delaware race, I thought she really ran a great race, and she seemed like she was a little one pace. So I wanted to be aggressive with her and made sure I had her in a forward spot. On paper, it looked like the five horse who was inside me and acted up at the start was the speed of the race, and it looked like Todd's horse on the outside liked to be tactical in the way Jose was warming her up before the race. He was very aggressive in his warm-up. So I thought, okay, you know, he's going to be even more aggressive than I thought, and maybe he'll wind up on the lead. But I just, my first instinct was to really get a good break, that those first couple jumps are really going to be important to me, just so I can get a forward position. I never imagined myself being on the lead. But when she jumped out of there for me and she outbroke the whole field, I thought, well, I can't take anything away from her. She's a big filly, and she, you know, gets into a good rhythm, and she's a little one pace. So I said, well, I'm here on the lead. Let me just go for it and get her in a good rhythm. And I mean, the entire race, she had her ears up pricked, and she kind of was just tweaking one ear every once in a while to check on me to see if I was ready for her. And, you know, when I called on her, she was just grinding away, and I wanted more from her in the turn coming into the stretch, and just to kind of open up a little bit. And, you know, she was just kind of a little bit lost. And when Todd's horse came up next to her and gave her a challenge with Jose Ortiz on her, she really pinned her ears back and came back to be pretty game on the inside.
Well, the betting public who backed you that day were pretty happy with you, because you get 30 Thou Calvin home at 11-1. You get Starting Over home at 6-1 in the Colonial Cup. Let's move ahead to this coming weekend, where you're going to be in a place you know New Kent pretty well, but you're going to a place you know even better than that, heading back home to Delaware to ride Tawny Port in the Cape Hamilton Stakes. And you're looking forward to a chance to get back home?
Absolutely. Delaware was where I was raised, and my father was leading rider there for many years. I never got a leading rider title there, but I was always kind of shipping in there on the off days of Laurel at the time. And I think I might have placed in the top three one meet, and always seemed to be hitting the board all the time, and always had a great percentage there. Now, fortunately enough, I was able to ride for Jamie Ness for a long time, and I got to go there on the off days and ride for Jamie, who's always leading trainer at Delaware. So to get back home and to see all my friends, it'll be great to be there. And, you know, I'm just really looking forward to it, and really looking forward to riding Tawny Port.
We're talking with jockey Trevor McCarthy on Off to the Races. Let's talk about Tawny Port for a minute here. This is a really an interesting horse, a multiple grade three winner on the main track. He ran really a very credible seventh in the Kentucky Derby last year. Now he's getting kind of a I don't want to say new lease on life, but kind of a new step in his career on the grass a couple times. You haven't ridden him yet in the afternoon, but you were telling me you've been on him in the mornings. Tell us about that and kind of what you're picking up from him.
Yeah, you know, he was a really cool horse to work in the morning. He's a little on the lazy side. He's a very one-paced. So, you know, really in his races, especially in his last race, he's always forward, and he likes to tick along a little bit. If you get him in a good rhythm, he seems to really just keep staying and keep finding more. And I found that out the other day too during his works. He was a little lazy to the start, and Christoph had him on the front end, and he had another horse covered up behind him, and they joined up for the last quarter of a mile at the top of the stretch. And when he had kind of somebody in his eye push him along, he just kept coming. And then his gallop out seemed to be very strong. So the distance is really he's going to love. I look at him as a horse that in the near future or maybe second career, he could run 4 miles over jumps. He's just that type, you know. But look, it seems like he's got a big cruising speed, and he can kind of throw some good fractions out there. And he can kind of, you know, make the lead too, and seems like to, you know, run slow in the beginning of the race. But, you know, he's kind of one that you got to, you know, keep pedaling on, and he's a little bit of a bicycle.
So how did you come to get this mount?
You know, I've had a great relationship over the last couple of years with Christoph Clement, and he's been riding me out of town a little bit, shipping me around for some stakes this year. I rode the Virginia Derby for him the other day and had a great trip with that horse. And he asked me to, if I was interested in to going to ride Tawny Port and the Cape Henlopen. And look, he looks really great on paper, and hopefully he looks even better on race day, and we can win the Cape Henlopen. That would be super cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And a nice purse on this race, too, a couple $100,000. So it's not your grandfather's Delaware steak. It's a nice, solid purse that would certainly be worth the trip down from New York.
Absolutely.
I wanted to ask you one other thing. Now, you're a dad, your daughter, Riley, going to be, I think, 2 in a couple months. Obviously, being a parent changes everything in some sense, but I'm curious as to how it impacts, if at all, your sort of approach to riding.
Yeah, you know, she's really changed my whole life and changed my whole perspective on riding, and feel that, you know, I kind of made the transition into New York because of her, knowing that I was going to have a child. I had just gotten married. And I wanted to kind of find a place where I didn't have to travel as much and I didn't have to ride so many days a week. And the Mid-Atlantic, it just seemed like I was always so busy riding 6-7 days a week, riding day and night. And I needed to find a place where I could do well, make decent money, and be able to kind of, you know, juggle that family life and riding career at the same time. And, you know, being here in New York, I did fairly well. And then I went out to California to try that before she was born, to see if I could maybe have a chance to take off there. And that didn't work. So I came back here and kind of redeemed myself that winter and hooked up with a new agent, Joe Migliore. And we finished second in the standings at the Aqueduct Winter Meet. And that was when she was born. She was my biggest motivation. And, you know, I have great motivation from, Katie as well. And, we're making a great team, and, you know, it's like, you know, really our daughter Riley has just changed our lives to where, you know, we're able to work hard for 4 days out of the week. And then the other 3 days, we spend as much time with her as possible and, do as much hands-on things with her. And, you know, we have great support from family that help watch her. And we have the Anna house on the backside here. They have a daycare on Belmont's backside. So when we're working in the morning, we can drop her off at daycare. So really everything's, we really have great surroundings here in New York for us. And it just seems to work out, you know, and really work well.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. I also imagine it was pretty cool for you guys, just a couple years removed from being sort of unable to ride much there because of the rule that required spouses to be on a coupled entry, you know, horses to be coupled, and having to get that rule changed and stuff. I imagine it was pretty cool for you guys to also to see Katie win a bunch of races up at Saratoga this past meet.
Yeah, I think it's really even cooler for Katie. I mean, she's been the one with the tough end of the stick through the coupling rule. And then, you know, not that, you know, she didn't want to be pregnant and have a baby. Absolutely, she did. But, you know, it's tough to, you know, get back to riding after a pregnancy. And for her to overcome that, and she set her time, she galloped for a long time. And then she rode her first race back at Saratoga last year. And then she kind of had a, where she, you know, really rode a few here, rode a few there in the fall time. And then back winter time, she really started to get going and started to ride every day again. And she started to get more opportunity. And then come Belmont, she had a great start to the meet and then kind of stuck it out where she kind of flatlined a little bit. But still every day, woke up every day with a great attitude and never gave up. And she went to Saratoga. She got really lucky right off the bat, and kind of her attitude and her motivation and her drive and everything kind of was put in the right spot, and things happened and great things happened for her and just gave her even more confidence. And she was just thriving and thriving off that confidence. And she showed people that she had the ability that was always there. And for her to have such a great Saratoga meet, I was so happy for her because she was so deserving of that. And now she has shown people that she is capable and showing people who she is as a really as a person, but, you know, as a rider as well. And I just couldn't be more happy for her. So, you know, looking forward to this fall meet at Belmont or Aqueduct at the Big A or Belmont at the Big A. Sorry, I get it all confused.
We're all confused.
I don't know why it's called Belmont at the Big A. It should be just Aqueduct, but they got to come up with a strange name. So I really hope she can kind of continue momentum into this meet and really have a great slam in winter as well.
All right, good stuff. Well, congratulations on the recent stakes wins and both of your success up there. And look forward to seeing you back in the Mid-Atlantic. And good luck on Tawny Port and the Cape Hamilton.
Thanks so much, Frank. Appreciate it.
That was Trevor McCarthy, a familiar name and face, as I said earlier, to those of us in the Mid-Atlantic. Raced a long time in Maryland with a lot of success, also lots of riding in other places, including Delaware Park, Delaware, his home state, and was his father's, as he referenced, his father's kind of home base. I think he won 6 riding titles in a row, something like that. Mike McCarthy, just a very, very successful Mid-Atlantic rider, and Trevor McCarthy following in those footsteps. All right, we're heading to the second half of the program now. Going to close up the shop at the end of the hour here, coming on maybe 10, 12 minutes to the hour. It's going to be John Piazzik. He's going to catch us up on some stuff going on with Maryland Million, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, and also help us handicap some of the stakes. 6 stakes, I think it's 6 stakes. A ton of stakes on tap at Pimlico today. At that list of stakes topped by the Grade 3 Baltimore Washington International Turf Cup, which is certainly a mouthful to say. If nothing else, it should be a fun day at Old Hilltop. Looking forward to some of those races, including the Turf Cup and the All Along, the Ben's Cat. So a bunch of interesting races. It should be a good day at Old Hilltop. But before we get to all that, want to talk to one of the trainers who's got a couple of horses in on the stakes card. And this is a name you're going to want to remember. She's really starting to get traction. She had her first 3 stakes wins came in about a 5-week period at Colonial Downs and at Monmouth Park earlier this year. She's going to have horses in Kentucky, horses at Oaklawn Park, but today, she's got 2 in at Pimlico in the All Along and the BWI Turf Cup. Her name is Lindsay Schultz, and here's my conversation with her. Lindsay, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. I wanted to start with this. I mean, you've had sort of a whirlwind summer. You got, in the space of about a month or 5 weeks, you got your first stakes win of any kind, your first open stakes win, and then your first graded stakes win. Tell me what it's been like for you.
Thanks, Frank. It's been unbelievable, really. I mean, we've certainly prepared ourselves for this and prepared the horses, but that's a pretty good run. And I mean, it definitely wasn't something we were expecting or imagining, at least not at this stage.
Well, it's nice when the good plans actually come through faster than you expected them to, right?
I hope it doesn't mean we have a dry spell or something now.
Well, you're bringing one of those horses, the Oceanport Stakes winner, highest distinction, to the Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup, which parenthetically is a terrible name, on Saturday at Pimlico. This guy is razor sharp right now. The only horse to have beaten him in his last 3 starts is Catnip, who turned around and won a Grade 3 and then was 2nd in the Grade 1 United Nations. How is he doing as you approach race day?
Yeah, I mean, razor sharp is a great way to describe him right now. The horse is training awesome. He's just, you know, he's a very straightforward horse. He's, you know, like showed promise as a 3-year-old, and then just kind of, you know, whether he got in too deep of waters or what, he just kind of didn't get to win for a while. but gave him some time off this winter and brought him back. And he, you know, he won a race at Delaware, and had to kind of grind it out, but got there, and it seemed like it gave him some confidence. So look, I mean, Oceanport was a big jump for us. We liked the horse. We knew he was training good. Obviously the second to Catnip was, gave us a little bit of confidence. But it was just, it's great to try it and see the plan work out. And now, I mean, there's no reason to not give him a chance here in the grade three, cause he's doing just as well, if not better than ever.
Yeah. I mean, handicapping it, he fits here. He certainly belongs with these. He's really improved since coming into your barn. Have you done things? Are there changes you've made, or you think it's just the time away, or what do you attribute that?
Yeah, I think it was the owner gave him time off this winter and just kind of restarted him. We sent him to Robbie Medina this over the winter and got him in a, you know, good spot at Turfway, and Joe Telmo rode him there, who had ridden him kind of before when he wasn't running as good, and Telmo did say after the race, you know, like this feels like a horse that is actually, you know, a different horse. You know, he's actually trying and he wants to run. So that was encouraging and just kind of went on from there. But you know, the horse loves to train, and we just tried to kind of put him in good spots. And I think, you know, getting his nose in front certainly helps an older horse get some confidence.
He's fairly new into your barn, which is also true of Creative Cairo, who you've entered in the all-along stakes, both of them not in the barn all that long. Doing a little reading about sort of your background, and I saw when you kind of went out on your own a couple of years ago, you had 7 horses in the barn. Now you've got 25, and it seems like you're starting to bring in the right sort of kinds of horses and the right owners to get you those horses. It has to be pretty gratifying the way this is coming together for you.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's definitely a dream. But when we, you know, we started with 10 Strike Racing with Marshall Graham and with Alan Schubert and Scott Galloway, and we claimed some horses, and we were able to get a few wins at Oaklawn the first year we were down there. And, you know, now we've been able to get some older horses that, like you say, you know, have had a break or something and willing to kind of give us a shot. Both these horses that are running today at Pimlico, they're both, you know, connections that I made when I was working for Tom Proctor, and Tom had asked Highest Distinctions owner to send him along to me when he was ready, and Spirit and Drones and Airdrie Stud, we had quite a few nice horses in training for them when I worked for Tom as well. So, you know, certainly grateful to all those connections, and, you know, they've given me the opportunity with some nice horses.
We're talking with trainer Lindsay Schultz, who has 2 entered at Pimlico later on this afternoon, Creative Cairo in the All Along and Highest Distinction in the BWI Turf Cup. Lindsay, one of the things I saw you had said in an interview when asked sort of what you had learned, and you've been in a number of sort of high-end barns, Tom Proctor, Shug McGahee, John Sheriffs, and said what you had learned that you were practicing in your own operation, and you said keep it simple. And I'm curious if you could sort of explain what that means.
Well, I guess just don't, like anything, you don't want to overthink it. If the horse is trying to tell you something, they're they're trying to tell you something. Don't try to make an explanation. If they're acting different, you know, maybe something's bothering them, or, you know, with the horse, like, highest distinction, if he's training good and if he's winning, don't look at his past races and say, oh, but this is what he used to run. So look, he's doing well. And that's put him in spots where he belongs right now.
You grew up in Connecticut, which, having lived there myself, I know is not exactly a racing hotbed. There are no racetracks in Connecticut, although there are a number of very interesting OTBs. Not sure if you ever got to one of those, but you said you didn't get in the, you were in the horses as a kid, but not racing. That came later when you were in college. What was it that drew you to racing?
Well, look, I grew up riding. There are a lot of horses in Connecticut. I think the stat at one time was there's the most horses per square mile, so they're packed in there. but I really took to taking care of horses, and I wanted to learn as much as I could. When I was looking for colleges, you know, I thought, oh, well, I just love horses. So I want to do something with horses. But thankfully I kept some logic about it. And the University of Louisville has a very good business school, and they offer an equine business major, which, is focused more focused toward the racing side. But equine focused, but you also take, you know, all your business classes. So if in the event I didn't decide to go into horses after, that was kind of the path my parents allowed me to take. At least I had a backup. Going to the University of Louisville, I got to be, you know, right there on the corner from Churchill Downs, and just really was immersed in the whole racing industry, and just tried to learn as much as I could, and it was exciting. But yeah, since then I've just tried to kind of be a part of every facet of the thoroughbred industry to just learn as much as I can, because I didn't grow up in it like a lot of people have. But I think that my background with horses has certainly helped to prepare me to be a trainer, and then all my experience in the industry has just built on that.
You kind of, I mean, talking about your background, you took a little longer. You know, a lot of people who become trainers, I think, do it a little more quickly. And is that sort of what you're talking about there in terms of immersing yourself and trying to sort of play maybe a little bit of catch up for versus people who grew up around horse racing?
Yeah, I think absolutely. I think a lot of what we do in training horses or taking care of them is something that you really gather through experience. And I always knew that, you know, maybe not being in the stall when I was 5 years old, you know, might hold me back a little bit, or, you know, people might not be as quick to accept me. So I just really wanted to make sure that I built that foundation as strong as I could. And, you know, everywhere from, I got to, when I was on Godolphin Flying Start, I did, you know, night watch at a few foaling barns, and, you want to kind of see the whole, lifestyle and the whole industry, right? Of the horse, the mating being planned, to foaling, to weaning, to prepping yearlings for the sale, and breaking, and then eventually training.
You've been based at Monmouth for the summer. Are you going to head back to Oaklawn after at this point, or what's next on the agenda?
Yeah, Frank, I think we'll definitely plan on going to Oaklawn this winter. But I just sent some horses to Kentucky, so we'll have a string there, and probably in a couple weeks from now we'll bring all the horses from Monmouth over to Keeneland, try to participate in the racing there, and then head on down to Arkansas.
All right. Well, it's a pretty exciting time for the Lindsay Schultz Racing Stable. Two in at Pimlico today, including BWI Turf Cup contender Highest Distinction. Lindsay, thanks so much for joining me, and good luck this afternoon.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks very much for having me on.
That was trainer Lindsay Schultz, all set to send out Creative Cairo 12-1 on the morning line in the All Along Stakes at Pimlico today. And also Highest Distinction, the Oceanport Stakes winner. He's 3-1 in the Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup. And again, that's a name you probably want to remember. You're going to be hearing more from Lindsay Schultz, I think, as time goes on. Now, are her two horses going to win? Are they going to factor? Well, to help us figure that out, let's bring in John Piazek. John with the Maryland Horse Breeders Association and also handicapper on the racingbiz.com. You read his selections every day of live racing in Maryland. Let's see what John Piazek has to say about the races this afternoon at Old Hilltop. John, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Some interesting things happening up at the Maryland Horse Breeders, and we're starting to think about Maryland Million. What you got going on?
Yes, only 4 weeks out from Maryland's Day at the Races, the Jim Bacay Maryland Million. First of all, though, coming up on the 25th, we'll have Ross Petticord, the Executive Director of the Maryland Horse Industry Board, come by the library and give a talk about the new Maryland Horse Park system. It's an alliance of three cornerstone equine destinations, the Prince George's Equestrian Center, the Fair Hill Special Event Zone, and our fine building, the Maryland Horse Library and Education Center. Of course, Ross, a very friendly and talkative guy for anyone who knows him. Be sure to come on out. That's Monday, September 25th at 4 o'clock. Register at marylandhorse.com/library. And, of course, Maryland is coming up, lots going on, plenty of club tables still available for sale. We'll have our annual hat contest, Maryland Million Watch, updated every week. Be sure to go to marylandmillion.com and learn all about Maryland's Day at the Races.
It's good stuff if it helps you keep track of all the horses that might be coming to the Maryland Million and what they're doing. So it's a good service, certainly, you know, for the handicapper or a fan who's starting to think ahead about who might be there, it's a good place to look to see the latest. And some of those horses might be running Saturday at Old Hilltop. John, let's talk about this card. It's topped by the awkwardly named Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup. But you said this might be your favorite card of the year from a betting perspective.
I really like this card. I like a lot of good price choices on top. And I was telling you, I could play a straight pick five on the last five races and feel pretty comfortable. For all my analysis, of course, go to theracingbiz.com. But one horse I really like in here is number 9, King Vega, trained by Graham Motion. Horse boys in the saddle, a generous 5-1 on the morning line. Made his first start of the year last time out in a tough allowance optional claiming race at Colonial Downs. Went to the front, led the whole way, almost got caught late after honest fractions, but held on and won in a dead heat. On the Bissonnette scale, he has a huge speed figure edge, ran a career best 97 in his last start, in his first race in about 9.5 months. So definitely a chance to improve. Second time out, has a lot of speed in a race without a ton of it, so he could get to the front, get another good front running trip, and cruise from there.
This horse won the Buckland last year at Colonial Downs. Hadn't started this year, was off all the way up until August 3rd at Colonial. Came back in, as you mentioned, dead heated for the win with Commandeer. So pretty good return to action. Forest Boy's going to be up there. Who else you got in this race, John?
Likely favorite in here is number 7, Smokin' Teeth, with Shug McGahee and Fogle Lynch. He's faced much better in his last two starts, or at least last time out he did. Two starts back, he won the Lower Stakes in a hard-fought effort at Saratoga, won a three-horse photo over some nice horses, including Dakota Gold and Portfolio Company. Then went to Kentucky Downs in the Minutes Million, one of their big million-dollar grass races. Last on the pace, not a terribly constructive pace, as the top four finishers were 1, 2, 3, 4 at the first point of call. Nonetheless, held on the whole way, lost by only a half length, takes what I think is a drop in class and should get a nice trip just off the pace.
Smoking tea there for Suge McGahee and Fergal Lynch. Couple others in here worth a look might be Wolfie's Dyna Ghost, multiple grade three place stakes winner of over $720,000. Oceanport Stakes winner, highest distinction. And the horse you have in fourth, who's Cazadero. I can say that.
Owned and trained by David Jacobson, Angel Cruz in the saddle on him. He's been going mostly in sprints, including a trip to Dubai earlier this year when well beaten in the Alcor sprint. Tried three allowance races, both in Maryland and in New York. Kind of come from off the pace every time. But if you're a closer, grass sprints are usually not your speed, and he missed the board each time. Now he's drifting out a bit, going back around two turns. Has the best late pace figures in the race. Not sure if he'll catch up with these late, but at a decent price, he's a must-use underneath in exactas and trifectas.
Yeah, I don't know. You get 12-1 on this horse. He's a grade two winner sprinting, won the Neartic last October at Woodbine, rallying from eighth to win. And then he was kind of nowhere in the Breeders' Cup Turf sprint. But, you know, two back, he ran okay going 7/8. I mean, I don't know. I don't think you're getting 12-1, do you?
I think so. I mean, I think Smoking Tea is going to be a pretty solid favorite. High Distinction is going to take money. Wolfie's Dyna Ghost, who I think is the main speed, likely to take play as well. Even if Jersey Fred, he's pure gold, could drift down off his 10-1 winning line. So considering all the horses who have legit shots in here, I think Cazadero could end up getting overlooked.
All right. Well, we'll see how that plays out. Let's head on to the All Along Stakes. That's going to be the eighth race on the card. Fillies and mares going a mile and an eighth on the grass here. And there's a bunch of horses here you can make a case for.
Yes, it's a wide open field of 12. My top pick is drawn towards the inside and has a pretty similar profile as King Vega. That's the one full count Felicia for Brittany and Sheldon Russell. She looked like a budding star toward the end of last year, won two out of her last three starts, both of them going away. We had a huge race to wrap up the season at Laurel on the 19th of November, won by 6 lengths after closing off a slow pace. However, missed some time, came back for the work tab in mid-June, and returned to the races with a nice second-level win in Ex-Colonial back on August 19th, where once again she rated off of mild fractions and powered away late. With the inside post, she does run the risk of getting caught in traffic, but as long as it's not too bad, look for her to roll by these at the top of the stretch.
Now you got a couple of last out winners here are drawn right next to her. She's going to be breaking from the one hole. In the two is Willa Kia, who led throughout on Route 20 and allowance at Colonial, and in the three holes, last out stakes winner Moofy. Want to say Moofy. What do you got for me on these, John?
Moofy's a fun name. And with Willa Kia, I mean, yes, it was a very easy pace last time. I just kind of jogged on pretty modest tractions, but there's not a ton of other speed in here. I mean, Unruly Julie could show some speed, but she got away with slower fractions in the Nellie Mae Cox last time out. And nobody else in here is really a confirmed frontrunner. So there's a pretty good chance that as long as Willa Kia breaks well, she'll drop over to the rail and the lead, set her own fractions, and just keep going.
It's kind of how I see certainly as a possibility. I know you like Moofy a little bit and also who else you got? My Risky Affair. My Risky Affair for Christophe Clément, who wins lots and lots of races.
Yes, all right. On grass.
Yeah, for sure. Who actually sent out the Virginia Oaks winner last week with Trevor McCarthy on the program a little bit earlier. Let's spin back to the sixth race. Maryland Bred and Sired horses going 5/8 in the race named for the great now Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Famer, Ben's Cat, the Ben's Cat Stakes. And this one looks like, kind of looks like Witty versus Trombetta and Larry Johnson. Do I have that about right?
That sounds fair to me. I mean, Witty, ironically, the only non-Maryland Bred in the field. He is sired by the one of the all-time greats of Maryland Stallion Ranks, Great Notion, and is a half-brother to reigning Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint champion Caravelle. He's faced, I think, a bit better than these in his last three starts, coming second each time, ran big speed figures each time. I mean, he could probably progress a few points on the Brisnet scale and still win. I know horses who come second a lot are a bit sometimes get a bit leery of them. I mean, this year he's come second five times and has won. But if there's ever a day where he's gonna win, it's this day.
He's certainly in good form, has run good races. Lizzie Merriman taking over the training reins from her son, McLean Hendricks. Now, Trombetta and owner breeder Larry Johnson have a pair in here. They are fresh off dominating the Colonial Downs meet, Trombetta leading trainer, Johnson leading owner by himself, and then added three more wins in partnerships with others. So certainly this is a barn combination that's been clicking pretty well. And, you know, Sky's Not Falling is really a nifty horse to me. I mean, you send him long, you run him short, you do this, you do that. He doesn't break, he breaks. He always runs his race, though. He always runs a pretty good race.
Absolutely. And he ran a great race last year when he won the Maryland Million Turf Sprint. This race is likely his final prep for a title defense on October 14th. He hasn't run around one turn since then. Each of his next eight starts have been around two turns. One going away, going a mile back on May 6th. Since then, though, he's been in stakes company in each of his last three starts, in many cases against better horses than he'll see here. For example, last time out, he saw the Maryland Bred Millionaire Field Pass in the five, along with a nice local two-turn horse, Crabs and Beer. Didn't have much of a chance that day, especially after getting in tight in the stretch. That being said, his best at least gives Witty a fight. Should benefit from going back around one turn.
All right. Going to have to call it a day on this. All right. John's got Full Count Felicia in the All Along, King Vega in the BWI Turf Cup, and Witty to win the Ben's Cat Stakes. MarylandMillion.com. Keep up with all the info on Maryland Million coming up October 14th. Much more to say about that topic in the days to come. John, thanks so much for joining me.
Always a pleasure, Frank.
All right, that'll do it here for us on this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us here on WNST. Thanks to our show supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, True Valor, standing at Northview Stallion Station, and Wanamakers.com online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show, which featured trainer Lindsay Schultz, Debbie Easter of the Virginia Equine Alliance, jockey Trevor McCarthy, and John Piazza. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.